You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 10 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Derek Janssen van Rensburg as SA Inc. shares takeoff yesterday. We've got Mustek CEO talking results and getting a sense of how the business operates, and then Prescient Investment Management on systematic investing. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines, MoneyWeb Growthpoint's debt surges to almost 70 billion rand. And from CNBC, the US needs $3 trillion in fiscal stimulus to support coronavirus-hit economy. Morning markets, lots of green US. We got the S&P up 2% last night. The NASDAQ was up 2.7%. Asia also green. Sydney up 0.3%. Tokyo up 0.7%. Commodities off overnight, but Brent back above $40 a barrel. Gold, $1,955. Rand, 16.66 against the US dollar. And top 40 opening call, looking for about a 0.4% green open.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Derek Janssen van Rensburg, you find him at Anchor Capital, where he is a portfolio manager. Derek, morning, appreciate your time. Lots of sort of taking off last night and yesterday in markets. Let's start with the local market. Tuesday was a good day for SA Inc., but yesterday was a monster day for our banks, our retailers. I mean, almost across the board, our SA Inc. shares were getting bought. Is this, I don't know, a sudden change of heart or foreigners coming back? Should we be alarmed or should we celebrate?
Good morning, Simon. Yeah, look, obviously it's been what a week for SA Inc. And I guess it just talks to some of the beaten down levels that we got to, particularly on our retail and obviously our banking sector. You know, we also had a very bad GDP print that came out during the course of the week. So I guess foreigners are looking at South Africa from an investment perspective and saying, well, how much worse can it get from here on out? We obviously had a strong beat out of ShopRite. And I think that probably acted as somewhat of a catalyst that, you know, despite COVID, South Africa still has some good listed businesses in the SA Inc. space. And, you know, obviously it took off and there was huge baskets of buying across the sectors. Could be short-lived. I think that South Africa's still got some economic structural headwinds that we are going to face. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine we would continue this kind of range-trading environment, no sort of strong upward trend to the upside. But certainly moving in the right direction, and obviously always good to see some of our SA-related businesses take off the way that they did during the course of this week.
Yeah, it does warm my heart and warm my portfolio. You mentioned ShopRite. I mean, what we are seeing, if you come out with horror results, the market's almost sanguine because, truthfully, we expect it. If you come out with a nice beat such as ShopRite, and the market rewards you, that stock was up 20% in 2 days.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of what the market is pricing in, or where we were pricing in, is bad results, bad numbers, lots of capital raises, debt increasing. You come out with a slight beat, well, then you're going to get reevaluated and revalued, obviously, to the upside. So, you know, hopefully it continues. What I can say is I do think that the SA corporate arena has got some really strong management, and hats off to the management of ShopRite for navigating a very difficult period and delivering what they did. So I certainly am very hopeful on the boards out there in the listed space, with, you know, particularly SA Inc. related, that they are more than capable to navigate a difficult storm. And there's lots of leverage in these businesses. You know, we've cut costs down to the bone. Across the board, you know, any sort of material operational uptick in earnings is going to have a significant leverage impact to the upside from here on out.
Yeah, I take that. And you know, it has to be sort of AVI as well. And I suppose in a sense, I mean, it's a sad thing to say, but a lot of our SA Inc. managers, man, in the last decade, you've learned how to manage tricky times, unfortunately. Aspen results came out after the close yesterday, as they usually do. There's a lot of moving parts here. If I take their normalized headline earnings, that's coming in at 1464. puts the stock on a PE of under 10, the leverage ratio of 3.89, and of course, subsequent to year-end, they've actually made another sale of the Thrombosis, which will take their debt from, what, $35 billion down to sort of maybe mid-20s. The stock looks cheap to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this is one of those bellwether stocks that just really got re-rated to the downside given the debt profile on the company's balance sheet. I think, again, hats off to management. They're doing exactly what they said they would do to the market. They're dealing with the debt issues. You know, obviously the stock sold down and re-rated to sort of single-digit type PEs, which you alluded to earlier. And I think, you know, maybe a fair valuation of around 12 times multiple as they continue to deal with their debt, sell off non-core assets. I think they're going to put themselves in a strong position to generate some strong organic earnings going forward. And then hopefully in the next year or two, you start to see them sort of move back into that acquisition zone, which is really what gave them that lofty, highly rated PE that we were so used to not so long ago. But I think, yeah, you know, you probably find it will continue to trade between the sort of 140, 160, perhaps 170 type level. And then obviously going to be catalytic around, you know, selling off further non-core assets. What are they going to do with the current debt levels? But I think they're in a comfortable position now when it comes to the debt levels, and they can concentrate on the core businesses in that stable and generating strong organic earnings from here on out.
Yeah, and I heard Stephen Sard in the week saying that they had never issued shares for all of their acquisitions, and kudos to them for that. Quick last question. I mentioned things flying. US green again overnight, strong 2% returns. Looks like the wobbles we saw over Labor weekend are perhaps over?
Yeah, look, I think the market there is still extremely highly rated from a valuation perspective. So you've got lots of volatility, particularly in the tech space. We saw a strong day in Tesla last night again after a massive sell-off. Amazon also picking up. So all those tech stocks really just giving some buoyancy and call it, you know, lots of money flowing into that space at the moment. I'm still somewhat circumspect, particularly in that growth space, talking to the technology sector. You know, if you are going to play in that space, you kind of want to highlight one or two stocks, have a fundamental price that you're happy to pay for, believe in the growth profile, but certainly I'm not chasing it. You know, this kind of volatility does kind of doesn't sit easy with me per se. You know, we do sit in a very low interest rate environment. You know, any kind of vaccine or move towards things getting better post-coronavirus, stimulus packages starting to falter, could see the market re-rate somewhat to the downside in that good news could be bad news for the market. So I am being circumspect. Valuations are high, but it is good to see some nice green on the screens.
Yeah, valuations are high, but I take it we'll take those greens. Derek Jensen van Rensburg, Portfolio Manager, Anchor Capital. Always appreciate the time.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with David Kane, he's CEO of Mustek, one of those little stocks that sort of constantly flies under the radar and constantly comes along and delivers results. Year-end June, revenue up 9.4%, HEPS 127 cents versus 139, full-year dividend at 56 versus 52 cents. The year-end dividend was a little down after a boost in the mid-year dividend. David, appreciate your time this morning. Lockdown, if I look at the numbers, before lockdown, and it's up to sort of, I suppose, mid-March, you were having a really good year, and then of course you basically lost April, which is a full month of the calendar year. How's trading been during May and particularly sort of post your year end as we've moved into the more relaxed levels of lockdown?
After the hard lockdown we had in April, May and June come back pretty healthy, and the market is trading very strong. I think that not only that you need to look at the earning, the headline earning is 8% down compared to last year. Not only that we have lost the whole trading month in April, but also that this DCL adjustment was out of our expectation. When I say that's expected credit loss, that we have to put up a relatively big provision for the debtors book. And that alone is a 30.5 million rent. So if we didn't have that, I think that we will have a better result than last year.
Yeah, I see that. The debtors book is what hurt. It's also, I imagine, I mean, you know, if I needed a computer during lockdown for whatever reason, it's not something that I don't buy. I in a sense, delay that purchase. And working from home as well, there's probably a fair bit of pent-up demand and new demand coming in for computers, laptops, peripheral devices such as printers and the like, which is exactly playing into Mustek's strength.
Indeed. I mean, not only that work from home increased the demand, also, you know, the pandemic is changing people's way of work, mm-hmm. and as well as the way the learner wants to learn. So those are the two are the two big propellers that is going to push us ahead. As you know, that that education department is already started to looking at how to improve the distant learning side.
Mm-hmm.
There will be you know, quite a good number of devices that will be placed into the market. That for the entire ICT sector, I mean, because once you place the devices in the market, I mean, the current network is just not good enough to support so many more devices. So there will be some upgrade on the infrastructures and networking and so on and so forth.
Do you operate much? I mean, I know Mustek as hardware, Mesa in particular. I've owned Mesa desktops in my time. I mean, do you do much in the sort of networking space as well?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I mean, we are one of the distributor of Huawei equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have experienced quite a good growth there.
Okay, and Huawei is also bringing into the 5G. How much are you selling direct to clients, to corporates, versus selling through a third party, through a dealer?
Are you talking about overall speaking?
Overall speaking, yeah.
I think that the direct sales is very limited. We mm-hmm. are a very much of a distribution company. We sell our product through resellers,
okay.
even to the public sectors.
Mm-hmm.
We work with our reseller to fulfill the requirement.
We'll leave that there. Mustek CEO David Kan, really appreciate your time this morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Bastian Tachgruber, he's head of asset allocation and investment research, Prescient Investment Management. Bastian, appreciate your time this morning. Systematic investment, sort of a cornerstone of Prescient philosophy, essentially a rules-based investment strategy using objective evidence. I mean, using hard rules, but basically saying, you know, we want to remove the emotion from the process. We're going to implement rules that will guide our investments.
Hi, Simon. Thanks a lot for having me on. Great to be on the show. Yes, you actually outlined it quite well. That's exactly what it is. So we investigate large sets of data, identify the genes during which a certain position usually is profitable, and then we just position our funds accordingly. So just to give you an example, at present we analyze a couple of million data points every day to arrive at our decisions. So it's highly systematic. It's data intense, but most importantly, and that's what I want to highlight here, we are taking out the emotions and the mm-hmm. human biases, which usually leads us to making and poor better investment decisions. So, that's basically the approach.
Yeah, emotion and bias, the enemy of every investor the world over. You're obviously crunching a lot of data in terms of individual stocks. Do you take it up to a larger level almost to help with that asset allocation process as well?
Yes, exactly. So we don't apply the approach so much on a stock level. We really apply it more on asset allocation level. So I want to give you an example. If we look at an equity index and it screens as having a lower price earnings ratio than usual, then we would just overweight the index. If the index is screening to have a higher P ratio, so if it's strictly speaking more expensive, we would tend to underweight the index. But that's just one factor now. So we're speaking about valuations, but in our process, we actually look at 16 different factors. So not only valuations, but also economics, financial conditions, market sentiment, all of that is basically captured systematically.
In a sense, almost passive, not passive. I mean, passive is much more rigidly rules-based. They track an index. Their rule is what the index does. You buy those stocks. So it's more than that. But it takes some of the better parts of passive. And I imagine one of those is removing costs out of the entire process. In other words, lower fees to clients.
Yes, exactly. That's all what it is about. So it is about efficiency and the smart processing of data. So we can run at lower costs simply because you don't need an analyst to speak to a corporate. The data is readily available today anyway. So what's the point? So our investment professionals are actually geared towards a unique skill set, which is more the field of data science, but then they combine this with a strong economic understanding. So it's a combination, basically, of the skill set which we look out for. So to answer your questions, other than a passive fund, we can be highly active, but other than an active fund, we don't face a cost. So we're really giving our investors the best of both worlds. So that's exactly what we're trying to achieve, and we're kind of taking away the difficulty for the investor to decide between active and passive, because we do actually think you can have both in one solution.
Yeah, and what you get here, I mean, I imagine the purpose behind this and removing that emotion is to deliver those better returns. Lower fees obviously also go into better returns. Does the evidence stack up? Does it give that sort of slight outperformance on an annual basis, which over the long term becomes significant?
Exactly. So it's not like the holy grail in the way that it gives you huge alpha or huge outperformance on an annual basis, but it's exactly that, adding a bit of alpha every single year, and then through time it comes through stronger. So it's basically creating certainty. So you have certainty that you get the optimal exposure for a certain market regime. So as I said, it's not a guarantee for outperformance, but it does mean that outperformance is more likely than when applying a more discretionary, maybe even emotionally driven approach.
And replicable, I imagine, as well. That's always one of my concerns. I might do a great investment, but can I, as the investor, replicate it? This helps replicate. My sense is it's not used much in South Africa. It's popular in some of the international markets, but locally not. I mean, what is your colleague, the sort of the aversion to it? Is it gaining some traction?
Yeah, you're right, Matt. It's not hugely popular in South Africa yet, but it is a trend, as you said, which evolved in Europe and the States over the last decade or so, and it will evolve in South Africa too. So we're seeing more and more signs, not just signs, but more evidence, actually, that there is a strong push for passive, lower fees, more transparency, but also a push for operational efficiency and a less turbulent journey. So yes, while this approach is not hugely popular in South Africa yet, we are very, very certain that it will become more and more important in the years ahead.
And I like that point, operational efficiency. I mean, in essence, I would imagine this means you can run with smaller teams, with more concentrated teams. And again, playing into the fee scenario.
Yeah, exactly that. So I do think we can process much, much more data than our peers with much less people. And we are very willing to give that operational efficiency back to our clients. And that comes in the form of lower fees. So you will get a very, very active fund. You get all the benefits of an active strategy, but you basically get the benefits of low costs as well.
Systematic investing. I like this idea. I think we need to dig down this road a whole bunch more on a whole bunch more interviews, but we'll leave that there for now. Bastien Tegheba, he's Head of Asset Allocation and Investment Research, Prescient Investment Management. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. We're on the MoneyWeb website and the app, the podcast from 7 a.m. Also on the website and app, and of course, wherever great podcasts are aggregated. You can chat to us on the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, hashtag MoneyWeb now. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks, as always, to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.